is Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Elizabeth Marquardt has spent much of her life's work trying to figure out the impact a divorce has, not on the couple, but on the children. She's the author of the book Between Two Worlds, The Inner Lives of Children of Divorce. It's based on the first national study of grown children of divorce in the United States. Marquardt spoke last week at Viterbo University as part of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership Fall Lecture Series. She gave a lecture asking, is there any such thing as a good divorce?
I wrote a book a few years ago in which I argued that there is no such thing as a good divorce. While some divorces are clearly necessary, I do believe, and while an amicable divorce is better than a bitter one, it's still misleading to call it a good divorce. And I say that for several reasons. Even when parents get along well after a divorce, and it can be a challenge for them to do that, but even when they do, divorce still hands children a very unique job to take on, and that is to make sense of their parents' two worlds in a way that their parents are no longer required to do. You know, the skill at which their parents handle the divorce or not really doesn't do much to change that essential job, and that's what I really focus on. Some of what I'm focusing on more recently, too, is just the longer-term ripple effects of divorce, that it's not just something that reshapes childhood, which I've argued, but it reshapes family structure for a lifetime. And a new project that a friend and I are doing now is on how people, as they age and as their divorced parents age and start to perhaps need care, how coming from a different kind of family structure can shape that experience as well. So we're working on a new book called The Gen X Caregiver, trying to look at that point of view from the Gen X generation of what happens when all our baby boomer parents who divorced or remarried or are living together with someone, what happens when they're no longer, you know, healthy, young, autonomous people, but now perhaps aging people who have some health concerns or financial concerns.
And to clarify, you do look at the effects of divorce on grown children. That's mostly what you study?
Yes. My book on, it's called Between Two Worlds, looked at, I interviewed young adults, people 18 to 35 years of age. So we did a national survey, 1,500 young adults, half from divorced families and half from intact families, and then also another 71 interviews in person with those young adults, again, half and half. And I do that for a few reasons. One is just that it's just a whole different ball of wax to interview minors, to interview children, you know, and that's something I'd like to do sometime. I've got another project idea in the future that I'd like to maybe do that. But I wasn't ready to try to do that yet and to work through, you know, parental permissions. And there's unique skills definitely to interviewing children. Mainly, I really like the model of interviewing young adults about their childhood experience and then doing it in a comparative way. So for our study, we interviewed young people from divorced families and those who grew up with married parents to get some kind of comparisons coming out. Because I find that young adults, people especially kind of in their 20s, they're really reflective about what they've come from, their family of origin, and it's just before they've generally started establishing their own family that they'll live in the future. And they're just very, they're just in a very, it's a very reflective time of life, trying to make sense of who am I, where did I come from, what am I to be now as I launch into my next phase of life, which is as yet undetermined. And they have a lot of energy, a lot of passion. So I like that model.
Do you notice a difference if a child has experienced a parent's divorce earlier in life versus later in life?
Yeah. You know, sometimes when I'm out talking about children of divorce and someone will say to me, well, if somebody's got to get a divorce, you know, what's the best time, you know, for a child? You know, it's like, ugh. Well, there's not really a best time generally, but it kind of goes both ways. The way I put it, you know, you have someone like me who I'm 42 now, but a long time ago when I was two, my parents divorced. You know, so it was before my memory, and sometimes people think, oh, maybe that's good because you don't remember them being together or something. But the way that I put it is that the younger you are when your parents get divorced, the more sort of likelihood of post-divorce kind of chaos you're going to be growing up in, because now you have not just one family system but two family systems. The remarriage divorce rate is higher than the first marriage divorce rate. The living together breakup rate is even higher than both of those. And so you're more likely to have more of your childhood being spent with your mom and your dad each trying to find their new person and, you know, and all that comes with that, with moves and relocations and job changes and, you know, step and half siblings coming in and maybe going out again and all that. So that's kind of what can happen the younger you are, your parents divorce. The older you are when your parents divorce, though, it's really, seems to me, in a sense, the more you have to lose. Because the more, you know, say you're 15 or 18 or 20 or 30, or the more your identity was formed in and built on that intact family story. You know, you have a whole set of family memories and photos and, you know, this kind of like touchstone that as you're in that long process of leaving home, which is we never just leave home like, well, most of us don't. We don't just like shut the door, leave home, never look back. It's a long negotiation of how to separate yet still be connected, you know. And in that process of leaving home, you know, your family story is the touchstone that you go and come from. And so when you lose that, when suddenly that breaks apart or someone says, well, it wasn't really, we shouldn't have married in the first place, you know, how do you look at your photographs the same way again? You know, the picture of all of you that day when you were 12 and you look happy and you thought you were happy, but now your parents split up. Is it, you know, the photograph suddenly it's painful to look at it. It's not a happy photograph anymore. So I think it's just different depending on how old you are.
And even if when you're older, it could change your outlook on the future. You have a picture of what your future is going to be.
Definitely.
Weddings, holidays, and whatnot.
Definitely. I mean, I have a lot of, I think sometimes we're a bit callous in our public debate about, there's generally more sympathy these days for children of divorce. People have gotten the message pretty well that this really is hard for kids. They're not so sure what to do about that, but they accept that it is hard for kids. But I find that when people are in their 20s or 30s or older and their parents get divorced and they're, I think, quite justifiably pretty upset about it, people are kind of harsh on them, like, well, you're not a kid anymore. It's not like you're living there anymore, you know.
But it's just as painful.
But it is quite painful, and it really actually introduces a lot of new logistical concerns and pretty urgent concerns for adult children if their parents are choosing to divorce. Maybe if you've got a mom who hasn't paid the mortgage ever, or a dad who, you know, he's being left by his wife and he's just, you know, he's falling apart. So your 60-year-old dad's falling apart, you know, and what's your obligation there, you know? And even just, you know, once you have your own children, your own family, and it's just complicated with trying to get the grandparents, everybody equal time. And
have you studied at all the effects that children of divorced parents, the effects that that has on their own personal relationships?
Yes, I have some, and other people certainly have a lot. I mean, it's definitely pretty well documented now that if children of divorce, people whose parents divorce themselves have a higher divorce rate later on. And we saw that in our own study, too, on my look at the moral and spiritual lives of children of divorce. We didn't focus too much on their adult relationships, but we did ask some basic questions about relationship status. And one of the interesting wrinkles to come out of that was that not only did our study show, as others have, that children of divorce themselves have a higher divorce rate later, but we broke out looking at good and bad divorces. And oddly, those who grew up in good divorces had a higher divorce rate than those who grew up in bad divorces. Hmm. So you would think that those who grew up with bad divorces, that is, parents who are still in conflict even after the divorce or losing all contact with a parent, you would think that they would be really doomed, you know, when it comes to their marriages. But actually, they fared better in terms of marital stability and quality than those who grew up in good divorces.
Do you have any idea why?
We speculate that we don't have any idea why, but we speculate that it may have something to do with the puzzle that the good divorce really introduces for children, which is that, you know, everyone's saying, and you're kind of seeing, well, your parents are good people. They just couldn't live together anymore. They love you. They're having a good divorce. Generally, people who can achieve good divorces had pretty low conflict marriages to begin with. Unfortunately, people who have high conflict marriages don't turn out to be very good at good divorce because you don't learn great new communication skills and maturity through the process of getting a divorce. So the people from good divorces tended to have, you know, more low conflict marriages that they were living in, which one day just suddenly fall apart without much warning for the child. And then their parents are getting along. Everyone thinks this should be fine. And yet it's still giving the child this big job that I'm talking about. And it's also really introducing some mistrust in the institution of marriage. What is this marriage thing where you make a promise to be in it and you're in it, and then suddenly, even if you're not, something horrible isn't happening, nobody's getting beaten up or, you know, addicted to drugs or whatever, and yet it doesn't work anymore, makes you kind of distrustful of that institution. Whereas in a bad divorce, as much as I would not suggest that anybody raise children in a high conflict post-divorce era, at least perhaps that gives the child a way to say, my parents were screwed up people, you know? And that's sad, and that's got an impact. But it makes them perhaps be able to put more of the onus of the failure on the parents rather than on the institution of marriage.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Elizabeth Marquardt. She is the director of the Center for Marriage and Families Institute for American Values, and she's here in La Crosse giving a lecture for the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. So you said that depending on the level of conflict, whether it's high conflict, low conflict, situation with the parents, it may not make a difference later in life for children, or you know, it affects them in different ways. But is there any one way to handle a divorce so that a child later in life is not as screwed up?
I hope so. For the sake of all of us who grew up with divorced parents, I hope so. I do think that there's, you know, sometimes people, I think, get a little frustrated with my approach because I'm not someone who's written kind of a cookbook of, you know, well, you're divorced, so here are the 10 things you can do to make it better. Or if you go to Huffington Post, they have a divorce page now, and I do some writing for that page. But so many of it, you know, 6 things you must do to, you know, it's like, it's all lists, you know. And I think life's a little more complex than that, as I think most people would agree. First of all, just if you're not yet divorced, I really want to encourage folks to know that their good enough marriage, which is mostly what we're talking about, you know, a high conflict marriage is the minority of those. It's awful. And you need help. You may need a divorce. But the average marriage, this is kind of like got the blahs, and one of the partners is thinking, you know, maybe just kind of moving on would be nice. I just want to encourage those folks that their good enough marriage is doing a world of good for their kids. You know, that just sort of messy, bumpy day-to-day life of, you know, who's taking the kids to soccer and when are we ever going to go see a movie again? And, you know, and gee, you've put on 40 pounds and I still love you, but it's not quite, you sure were cuter when we were dating, you know, or just that kind of normal blahs is doing a world of good for the kids. So don't settle for the blahs, you know, make an effort to reconnect with your spouse and do the things that you found fun before you had kids and all that. But know that what you're doing by being married, you're not, you know, achieving perfection. None of us are. But you're creating one world for your child. You're making it your job, not your child's job, to bring your two worlds together. And so that's really good. So if you already are divorced or you must get divorced, I think one of the things that you can do is, you know, the thing that's made this job for children, I think, so hard, this job of having to make sense of their parents' two worlds in a way that their parents no longer have to do after divorce. One of the things that makes it so hard is it's a very lonely job because no one's named it or talked about it. We kind of look at kids, and especially if their parents are having what seems to be a good divorce and nice people seem to be getting along pretty well. You know, the kid's distracted and they can't remember which house they left their backpack at, and they're one of those kind of like, I remember one woman telling me, I thought I was a space cadet, you know? My parents, everything seemed fine, and I lived half the week here and half the week there, and I just thought I was a space cadet. And this woman I was talking to, she was getting her PhD in ethics at the University of Chicago. She was not exactly a lightweight when it came to capability, you know, but she was in a situation that even adults would find very disorienting to try to live in. And so when people around you aren't just recognizing that and saying, hey, you've got a big job here, you know, and in a sense almost kind of ascribing some dignity to that job, you know, I mean, the child might be 5, the child might be 12, but saying, you got a big job here traveling back and forth and making sense of these two worlds. And, you know, I, your mom, or I, your dad, you know, I want to help you with that as best I can. But I know that there's, and I will, but I also know that there's just, you know, this is something that only you really know what you see everywhere and what you feel everywhere. And it is a big job. So good for you for doing your best with it. I'm here if you ever want to talk to me about it. If your mom and I, your dad and I can ever, you know, help make it a little easier, you know, let us know. I think that would help.
I think it was interesting what you said, how some people criticize you for not putting together the manual on how to divorce. But it doesn't seem like there is one out there for the parents or even for children how to handle it. I mean, divorce rate's at 50% in the U.S., is that correct?
Yeah, first marriages, it's somewhere in the 40% for about around 43% for first marriages and then higher for remarriages.
You know, I mean, that's almost half the population, yeah. If not half the population.
And that's of those who are just getting married in the first place. Now we have, mainly because of fear of divorce, we have many, many people who have children now without marrying. And so our out-of-wedlock childbirth rate in the country is about 40% now. And what's really driving instability in children's lives now is cohabitation, not divorce, because cohabiting relationships are so fragile. And So that's just a whole other dimension to all this. I've said it with a laugh, but it's kind of a sad laugh that I increasingly think children of divorce are the lucky ones, because at least there's a structure there to name, you know, it's like my parents were married, then they're divorced. Now, you know, they're remarried, you know, that guy's my stepdad. That is still my dad, but you know, he's my mom's ex-husband. But when your parents are living together or just in a relationship or just hooked up or something, anyway, when they were unmarried, when they had you, it's even more uncertain, I think, kind of who these players are and what you can expect of them. And it's much more transient. You know, fathers are less likely to stick around if they're not married to the mom.
I know your focus is on children when you study divorce. And you said that divorce rate is higher for second-time marriages after a divorce. I mean, are there other effects that the initial divorce or the second divorce, third divorce, has on the person, on the adult that is getting the divorce?
It's a good question. I mean, well, one thing people have asked is, why is the remarriage divorce rate higher than the first marriage divorce rate? I think part of that is some social learning that goes on. I've been married once so far for 16 years. If I wanted to get a divorce today, I really don't know how to do it. It's funny. This is my field. Well, what do you do to get divorced? I wouldn't know. And I like that I don't know.
Sure.
You know, I guess if I was an abused wife, that could be bad that I don't know how to get a divorce. But in general, I think it's good that it's all kind of mysterious to me. And we see this kind of contagion effect that social scientists have identified that happens when you'll see divorce kind of sweep through a group of coworkers or siblings or neighbors. One gets a divorce and then others do too.
Really?
Because, yeah, and it's been identified as kind of a type of contagion effect. If you just look up online, if you look up divorce contagion effect, there's been some interesting pieces on this, popular media pieces in the New York Times and stuff, but also some academic papers. And it's that social learning aspect, kind of making that leap to, gee, I have problems in my marriage. Gee, maybe I want to get a divorce. Gee, how do I, you know, here's the next step. So in a remarriage, when you start to hit troubles, as any marriage does at some point, you've already kind of done that before. You know, you might even still have, you know, your divorce lawyer's number in your Rolodex, you know. And it's just a lot more stressful in a remarriage because generally you're blending one or more other families, you know, and you've got kids coming and going in and out of different family systems. And the financial complications alone are just large. It's really hard for me to imagine how people manage it when, you know, like right now, me and my husband, we have two kids and they're our kids, you know. So a portion of my husband's paycheck is not going to his ex-wife for her kids who would be perfectly sweet little children. But, you know, what about our kids? Excuse me? I mean, you can only imagine the tensions and stresses that could arise from that. So there's a lot of reasons why that could play into why remarriages are more likely to fail. That said, for anyone listening who is remarrying, there are many successful step families. There's a great group called Successful Step Families. And if you go to their website, they've got a lot of good ideas. So it can be done, and trust can definitely develop between stepchildren and their step parents over time. It doesn't happen immediately, but over time, and really beautiful things can happen. But it requires some intentionality. You know, you can't coast quite as much as maybe you can in a first marriage where everybody's sort of loyalties are more parallel.
It is interesting when you hear about, I say children, and some of them end up, you know, they're in their adult years, but when you hear about kids who say, it's good that my parents got divorced, mm-hmm. I'm glad they got divorced, mm-hmm. you know, you don't hear that very often, but.
Yeah, you do hear that some, and I respect that story. I mean, it's not my place to tell someone that they have the wrong interpretation of their own life. So I certainly respect that story. I guess one of the things is just when you're thinking about it, all of our stories matter. And then there's the other element of when you're thinking about it as a social issue or a public policy issue and what should be the weight of the various stories that we hear. And some people do feel that their parents' divorce was the right thing for all of them. Some people feel that their parents should have gotten divorced. And those are the folks sometimes I want to kind of just shake by the shoulders a little bit and like, you just don't know what all comes after. You just think it means that, you know, you would have the same life you had before, but just like in two houses, you know, it's like everything that, you know, moving school. I was thinking about it last night. By the time my daughter is in fourth grade right now, by the time I was in fourth grade, I was in my third school and I was in a different peer group every summer because I would go visit my father in the summers and be with kids who, you know, and that was by age fourth grade. And, you know, I asked myself why I have kind of like, you know, anxiety around peer relations. It's like, oh, maybe they had some. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was two. I mean, this stuff it's just, it becomes part of the whole life cycle. I do think that we need to have divorce as an option, but we also need, as a public policy matter, to recognize that supporting marriages so that they don't have to end in divorce is also a really just more proactive and, I think, on the whole, better strategy for everybody involved.
Elizabeth Marquardt, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about or any other takeaway when people come to your discussions or they read your articles, read your books?
I appreciate that question. Well, one thing is, I would love if people wanted to check out our blog. We have a blog, familyscholars.org, familyscholars.org, and we our tagline there is engaging the key debates, and we really try to keep invite people of varying points of view on the family structure question to blog, and we've got some great writers there. And one of the things we're trying to do right now is launch what we're calling a new marriage conversation in America, because we have a really funny moment right here in America where we have a small group of people who really, really, really want into marriage and who won some very impressive political battles in regard to that. And yet we have a lot of other people who are qualified to be married if they wish, who are getting out as fast as they can, either not entering or, you know, they're just leaving the institution in droves, especially in the broad middle of America, where it's just, it's incredible now, the out-of-wedlock birth rate for women under 30 is now over 50% in this country, and most children are born to women in their 20s. So, you know, just something has really changed here in the last, and it's happened in the last 10, 15, 20 years in terms of how people think about the institution of marriage. And one of the things we'd like to do is lead a new conversation that brings all these players to the table, where you don't have to agree about gay marriage or not. You don't have to accept a culture war mentality on this, but you do have to accept that there's a possibility that marriage is a very strong institution that can do a lot of good for family stability, for children, for social stability. A very heartfelt minority wants into it. Others who are already have access to it are leaving. And something important here is potentially happening, where something really good can happen or something really, I think, really terrible is happening. And can we find a new way to talk about marriage in America that isn't so divisive? And that's what we're trying to do. So we'll be doing that. Our blog, Family Scholars, is one place to kind of start being part of that discussion. And we're going to be releasing some new materials and a call to a new conversation on marriage in America and things like that.
Elizabeth Marquardt is the director of the Center for Marriage and Families at the Institute for American Values in New York City. She talked at Viterbo University last week, asking, is there any such thing as a good divorce? It's part of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership Fall Lecture Series. Coming up next, a discussion with a British journalist who debunked a link between autism and vaccinations. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links in our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.